Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace. This episode is an interview I did with comic creator Phil Jimenez back in April at WonderCon. I think I previously released this episode on our Nine Panel Grid podcast, but never released it over here on the Comic Source side of things. And with the recent migration of Nine Panel Grid from the previous hosting site we were on to a new hosting site, a lot of the content that was there is no longer available. I'm hoping that I will be able to repost all that content at some point. But in the meantime, I thought I'd share with you Comic Source listeners this interview with Phil. He's been one of my favorite creators for a long time, and really wanted to have him on the show for quite a while, and he was very generous with his time at WonderCon in April when we sat down and spoke. Took some time out of his busy convention to meet with me outside of the convention and talk Superwoman and diversity and the Wonder Woman movie. So it's really nice when you have a creator who you've wanted to meet for a really, really long time and that you admire, and then you meet them and they even surpass any expectations you might have. Phil's a super talented creator, really nice guy, very, very smart, very, very invested in the medium, and really cares about the medium and the work he does, and finding new voices to tell new stories. So I'll go ahead and let you listen to the interview. I hope you enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, this is Jace from The Comic Source. I'm here with legendary comic creator Phil Jimenez. Phil, I've been wanting to have you on the show for a long time, like I told you. It's a pleasure to have you. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I questioned the whole legendary adjective, but I'll take it for now.
No. In fact, I'll tell you that I mentioned it to a few of my other creator friends. Yeah, I'm finally having Phil Jimenez on the show. And to a man, they all say, oh, he's written some of the most epic stories. He powerful women, great stories. So don't sell yourself short.
No, I'm grateful. I tend to think of legends as folks like Neil Adams and Bill Sienkiewicz. I think of myself more as a journeyman who's made it a long way.
Okay.
So there you go.
Fair enough. You've worked on some icons like Wonder Woman, Teen Titans, Big Events, Infinite Crisis, most recently DC Rebirth.
Sure.
And your most recent work on Superwoman.
Right.
Do you feel like, looking back on your career, it's gone the way you hoped when you first wanted to break into comics?
That is a long question. I was actually contemplating that this morning. Wrote a Facebook post about it. I think I've been really lucky in this business to have a career at all. I think a lot of people don't even imagine that that's possible. I don't think my career went the way I planned, partly because at the time I got in the business, and because there was a long period of time about chasing sort of nostalgic feelings, trying to recapture something. And if there's anything I've learned, it's that those moments that we all remember are lightning in a bottle. They can't really be recaptured. They can be revisited, but you can't make them happen again. And so I think I look back on my career and think there was a lot of that, trying to get back something that had passed. Mm-hmm. But another thing I realized, this might take us into a strange place, is that I was always a DC kid. That's true. I was a DC Marvel person who tended to like smaller, quirkier characters, but could draw epic scale. And I think that was always my conundrum. Like, what I really wanted to work on were small, quirky projects. Mm-hmm. But what I was really good at was drawing epic crossover events.
Right.
So it's always been this battle between finding a space for me where I could do that for DC and make them money, and at the same time work on these smaller, quirkier spaces that made me happy.
Yeah, I tend to gravitate toward the kind of the second tier characters as well, just because not everybody knows them, and it just, I don't know, there's something about charming about, you know, characters like Ghost Rider or The Creeper or Plastic Man.
I'm even going like lower tier, like Global Guardians, right? Like, I love those characters, partly because you can play with them, or once upon a time you could play with them and nobody would notice or care. But the problem with nobody noticing or caring is nobody is buying, right?
Right.
And I always felt like there are going to be people who are going to write Batman and Superman and draw them 1,000 times better than I will ever be able to, and are more interested in that. But like, nobody's ever gonna handle those Global Guardians the way I would, right? Like, because I care about them in a way that nobody does. So it's interesting. I think it's one of the reasons I was a Titans fan, or I'm trying to think, even like a New Mutants fan, which I know New Mutants was like a really big book at the time, but they were also essentially second tier characters,
right? Oh, yeah.
Right? And I loved them for that.
Now, I mentioned you just finished up your Superwoman run. Do you have something else on the horizon that you can mention or announcement?
At the same time, I was hired to do Superwoman. I was hired by Warner Brothers to write and produce a web series, a live action show. And so I've been working on that a lot, and it's actually been very gratifying. And it doesn't sound really big, and I'm not sure it will be, but it goes back to that idea of small, quirky characters. And what's amazing about that, again, is creative freedom. So web series are not big money makers, and so the producers are encouraging a lot of play and a lot of diversity and a lot of stuff that I'm not sure I could have on a bigger thing. Although, think about the success of shows like Riverdale, maybe that's not entirely true. But it's, if nothing else, it's really fun. And so at least at DC right now, they're veering headlong into some big events, and I'm going to let them have those events.
Okay.
I'll do some covers along the way, but let them get that stuff out of their system, and maybe I'll return. But right now, it's mostly this web series, which has been a real joy.
Cool. You talk about doing something live action. That's got to be visually so different from static images on a page, right? Does it use a different part of your creative sensibility, or do you feel like it's in line but just more because it's live action?
I don't think my storytelling has changed. I don't think my sense of pace or character development has changed. I frame things differently, literally, when writing scripts, mm-hmm. because I'm compensating for moving cameras.
Right.
But I don't think the way I tell stories or the kinds of characters I want to tell about stories about have not changed.
So it's just like literally
it's literally camera motion.
So literally your comic page is coming to life.
Yes, actually, and I in order to pitch it, when I was asked to pitch some material, I did Who's Who pages.
Oh, cool.
And even though it was live action, it was that same, I did model sheets, basically, like, this is the sort of actor I'd like, and these are stories, and they literally look like those old Who's Who pages from the 1980s. And they loved it because there were so many stories in each stock image, but they're normal people, right? They're not quite superheroes.
Right.
So it's this weird thing about a guy standing there with a montage behind him, but it really helped sell that material.
Cool. Let's talk specifically about your Superwoman book. When I was at WonderCon last year, actually, and they announced you on it, showed the page, I was, oh my God, I'm so excited. And that image of Lois. And then the end of issue one,
right.
She was kind of taken off the stage, so to speak. And I think it shocked a lot of people. Was that kind of hard? There was some kind of backlash on that. Was that hard for you, or did you know that did you have faith in the story that you wanted to tell?
So two or three things. One, I knew that, quite frankly, we had to get rid of Lois Lane because there were two of them in the universe. But I didn't want to get rid of her permanently, and mm-hmm. I always knew that I was going to bring her back in some way. So I went for a big, shocking end, knowing full well, and a couple issues later, I would bring her back as this ghost. And what I'd always wanted to do was a buddy book, a team book. In my head, Superwoman was really the Birds of Prey of Metropolis. That was always where I was going. And I just wanted to play, I wanted to experiment. What I liked was taking these characters, Lois Lane and Lana Lang, who have traditionally, for 40 years, not been friendly. And I believe Lana Lang was actually created as a sort of more tempered Lois Lane, because a lot of guys didn't like Lois Lane, right? And so there's all this other weird stuff behind them. Anyway, but I wanted to maintain that buddy relationship, even if I couldn't have Lois in the book. Also, I wanted to create a relationship, and I've said this before, about two people who don't necessarily like each other, but know they're really good together.
Right.
And they work together, right? And I think really great work relationships can come from that sort of conflict. I don't like you, but you're great at what you do.
Yeah, we're a great team.
And we're a great team, so okay, let's try this.
Now, did you, as the story kind of ratcheted up, and then, and I have to tell you, issue 8 was it blew me.
Did it make sense?
Oh, it totally
Good.
Made sense. It wrapped up so much, and there was so much kind of emotion and like you said, nostalgia. That's a good word for it.
Just, right.
You know, being in the farmhouse and them talking about this is where we all started. Yeah, it was. I loved it. But as the story kind of ratcheted up in the climax, you know, mentioning, you know, there's multiple Clarks, multiple Loises, it seemed like it was you were tying everything up also in the bigger story of Rebirth. Did you know from the beginning that it was going to kind of tie in with like the Superman Reborn kind of thing? And
That obviously the hemming and hawing means no. I had much longer plans for them. I knew that this was going to be wrapped up eventually.
Right.
I didn't know it was going to be wrapped up so soon. They moved that up.
Okay.
And so I had more to say with those two.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, on some level, also, I wanted to play Lois Lane a bit like the Ghost of Lois, like it could or could not be.
Right.
I never wanted to write her knowing anything that Lana Lang wouldn't have known,
mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to say, well, maybe it is just her conscience,
right.
But maybe it really is a ghost, right? Like, I wanted to have this possibility. But there were lots of conversations I wanted to have with those characters and things I wanted to do. Reborn moved up the timetable, and so I ended up wrapping up a little bit earlier than I expected.
Well, I was just telling John Boy Myers, actually. He was one of the ones mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. said that you were, you know, amazing and how you write, you know, such great women. And I was telling him that really, I feel like you could take that story you told in those 8 issues and expand it out to 24 and get even more, and that would have been would have been amazing.
Quite frankly, from a production standpoint, one of the things that hampered me a little bit, aside from the fact that I'm very slow, I'm owning it, I'm not a fast producer, which is why they put it on a monthly, but we were competing with bi-weekly books.
Right.
So my original plan was about, I'd say, 18 issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, oh, by the time I get there, the Superman books will have burned through 36 issues.
Yeah.
So they were one of the things I was not compensating for, or I really thought about it. DC thought we could massage it,
right.
quote unquote, was the time difference between the bi-weekly books and
right,
my
and
book.
Your monthly, right.
Which Lex Luthor became an interesting conundrum, because in my original story, like, you know, his sister puts him in the basement where he'd kept her for so long. And that was going to be, I mean, he was going to be missing for probably what it would have amounted to 2 or 3 weeks in real
right.
time. But it would have been 4 or 5 issues. And we had to speed that up because he was active in other books.
Right, right.
And there's even like the temporal anomalies in the big fight with Lena Luthor were partly to explain why things didn't quite
right.
match up
right.
in those books. So yes, my original story would have been about 18. I knew the title of the last issue was going to be, and I knew what the last word of the issue was going to be. Unfortunately, we didn't get that far because of Reborn, but there was a much longer plan.
It's interesting you mentioned Lex Luthor. Not somebody I ever, I mean, there's characters I'd love to see you on. There's characters I love to see you on that you've done, like Wonder Woman.
Right.
Lex Luthor's not somebody, when I think fill him in as, I don't necessarily think Lex Luthor, but your take on him made him, I think, more relatable than any Lex story I've read in a long time.
Oh, I hope that's true. That's great. I don't know if you're just saying that.
No,
very sweet.
It's totally true, especially the scene where Atomic Skull comes in and he says, I just want to hear 2 words. Right, and the way you, especially with the way it was lettered, like, I'm sorry, you could just see him as like the petulant child,
right?
Right? Like, I'm not really sorry, but I'm gonna say
this, yes,
yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was amazing. It was, you have managed, because this is kind of one of the problems I've had. I mean, I've been reading comics since I was 5 years old. Superman's always been one of my favorite characters. To me, Lex is always a bad guy, right? So I kind of feel the same way that the pre-52 Superman feels, not trusting this Lex.
Right.
He's being heroic, and I understand what Jeff's been trying to do ever since Forever Evil, which was a Lex Luthor
sure,
story.
Sure, sure.
Trying to really make him more heroic, but it just, for my sensibility with what I know of Lex, it doesn't quite gel. So what you've done is you managed to take the pre-Forever Evil Lex that I always felt was a bad guy, and this more heroic Lex that Jeff has kind of created, and you've managed to meld the two where it makes sense.
So 2 or 3 things. I'd like to give DC a lot of credit, legit credit for this. So I had a take on Lex, and we talked through it a lot, and they gave me a lot of leeway to play. But part of it was, understanding his psychology. So Lex is a character I've actually never, not unlike you, like, I think of him as a villain, and I still think of him as villainous. I don't think of him as a good guy. But it was through conversation with Jeff in DC that I sort of, I think I came to an understanding of his psychology. Lex was very interesting to me also in terms of relationship with his sister, because I didn't create that scenario that was pre-existing before I got there, but upon analysis, I realized, like, he's a big scumbag. And one of the things I really loved about that, but he, like, this is a guy, as I understood it, who the only, even the one person on Earth that he loved was his sister, but he still couldn't wrap his brain around, still couldn't accept the fact that she might be smarter than him, that, like, unleashed in the world, she could actually be better at what he does than he is. And just, like, just that. He loves her, and it still would not allow that to happen. The fact that DC let me tell that story, that they understood that take on his psychology, right? Like, that his ego was so much that even the one person on Earth he loved, he could not let her be better than him, even for a moment. That all filtered through my perspective on that character, and they let me tell the story. But I also think deep down, he was, like, horrified that this stuff happened to his sister and he was a part of it, right? I don't think my take on Lex is that actually troubles him, right? Like, this is a bad thing, but he's just incapable of getting his ego out of the way. And I will say the other thing, legit talking to you, and then I'll shut up. The fact that DC Comics let me have Lana Lang call Lex Luthor out on being a horrible human being, and they didn't correct it. They added one dialogue balloon, but they let her say, "You are awful." And they didn't DC is very protective of, like, Joker and Lex Luthor. They're villains because they see them as the heroes of their own story. Right. And to allow someone to say, "No, what you did is really shitty, pardon me," and allow it to stand, I thought was actually really great.
Yeah, it was powerful, because when Lex is talking about, oh, you know, it's almost like, okay, here's this horrible thing that happened to my sister, and I was a part of it, but don't feel bad for her. Feel bad for me,
right,
for how I feel about right. it. And Lana totally calls him out, like, "Hey, you are a piece. Are you kidding me?
Right,
you're
right.
a piece of shit."
I'm sorry, I'm giggling because that's how I read the story. And when I was breaking it down, like, chronologically, I'm like, he's horrible.
Yes.
And as anyone knows, we all write, you know, so many writers write, we channel ourselves through the characters we write. So a lot of Lana, if you hear my voice, that's because it's me. But again, I think that DC let us say that, right? That DC let us call one of their villains out on just being a jerk.
Yeah.
I give them many props, because those companies get very protective of their money making characters.
Yeah, if they're an icon, whether they're a killer or a villain, they're always careful. We mentioned that you are kind of known for writing these strong, powerful characters, female characters. Are you conscious of that? Like, oh, I'm writing this powerful woman, or is it to you? Is it just the character?
No, I'm never. I do not. I'm one of those people who does not believe it's just character. I'm an inside-out person, and I'm one of those people that believes we navigate the world in certain bodies. And if you're brown, if you're a woman, whatever that is, people respond to you in a certain way. So whatever your internal identity, the world still reacts to you as a woman, as a black person, as a white guy, as a queer person, right? Like, that's... So I don't believe we are stripped of any of that. I believe our experiences are based on the way we navigate, you know, people work around us and vice versa. So I actually was very uncomfortable being, I don't like being a guy that writes women in a business that is known for not letting women write women or women write guys. I think it's a very hard. I was well known for my take on Wonder Woman, but that's because I believe Wonder Woman is a character that talks about a couple of things, and I have a lot of, I have philosophies about those things. But I don't want to write Batgirl. I don't want to write Harley Quinn. I don't want to be the guy that writes women. I want to be the guy that has a perspective. In this case, with Superwoman, the thing that I was trying to do, the messaging was a little bit based on Mean Girls. Like, why are women so mean to each other when the world is mean to them, right? Like, they don't need to do that to each other. Right. They have enough going on. Yeah. So my whole take on it was, here are these two women who traditionally are written by men in catfights with each other, and I wanted them kind of made a textually be like, we're always pitted against each other. Why? Like, when we can do so much better when we're not pitted against each other. So the only reason I felt comfortable, and I really didn't, being the guy that wrote these two women, was because I had a point of view about the story. Like, not because I'm just like, oh, I know how to handle women. I think I know no better or worse than many others. And one of the things I really, knowing that Reborn was happening and so much of my stuff had to wrap up, I was like, why don't we finally let a woman write stories about women? Why don't we try that? Wouldn't that be like revolutionary? And it took us some convincing, but DC finally hired a woman to follow me. And I just thought it would be nice to have someone write their own stories. And for me at this stage, knowing what my limits are and also my strengths, I'm so much more interested now in getting new voices in. Like, I could have written that book forever and had a really good time, but at the same time, I'm really excited about, well, what would this new writer say? What would this new artist do, right? Like, that thrills me far more than hearing myself yap.
I kind of feel, and I know this is a kind of a pipe dream, is that it would be nice in comics if there just weren't even the labels, if it wasn't, oh, this male is writing this female. I mean, there's such a push for diversity these days, but I'm never a big fan of diversity for diversity's sake. So whether you're, you know, queer, or whether you're a woman, or whether you're Muslim, or whatever, you know, and it always has to be a thing. Just, why does it have to, you know, can we just tell stories?
We can't. No, we can't, because those stories are built around identities that were designed exclusively to prevent us from writing them. Marvel Comics, I think historically there were no black people allowed to be even background characters. That was these universes were designed to exclude us. And so, when people say diversity for diversity's sake, if you look at the numbers, our industries are still predominantly white and male, right? So diverse, like, and so people are like, well, why can't we just tell stories? Because we're telling stories about white men, right? That's what that really means. And I think people have a really hard time with that, because people are like, oh, I hate diversity. What do you mean? Like, adding more women or black people or queer people? Like, oh, it's too much. But, or it's seen as having agenda, or seen as like, why can't we just be writers? I really believe that default means, why can't we just be like the people that came before us? I just feel very, very strongly that in an industry, and particularly a genre, I should say, that was so exclusionary for so long, I think the default is this old version. It's like, you look at the Avengers, it's a bunch of white guys, and one little woman, literally, the Wasp, right? It's like that, the Justice League, the original Justice League is a team of white guys and one woman. Like, that's the world that we were born into. So, unfortunately, I think if we like it or not, we have to push against that. And if it's seen as agenda-driven, it probably is, but the agenda is to say, you never wanted us here, but we are here, so we're going to represent ourselves, and if you let us or not.
Well, I guess I should have stated it better. What I really am getting at is it would be nice for me if the comics just reflected the world that we live in.
Exactly.
So much to the point that we stop talking about it, though, right? Like, if it gets to the point where comics actually are made up of all different colors, all different races, all different kind of beliefs, and the characters really are the people around us.
Right.
It would be great if it got to the point where it reflected the real world, to the point where that became normal. Because you're right, the default is a bunch of white guys, and I think that's the problem.
Right. I definitely agree. But I think one of the great problems, of course, is that comics are not created in a vacuum. They are created by people who have social and political and religious beliefs. Sometimes I agree with them, sometimes I don't, but that's, I think, the other thing, that the sense that this stuff is created without, when people say like, oh, you're writing an agenda, all creators have an agenda of one kind or another. It's just sometimes more visible or like obvious, more obvious. But like, I think that what will truly change is when the entire roster of the Justice League is black, but they're just called the Justice League and
exactly,
not the Black Justice League.
Exactly.
But I think that's a long time in coming. When Dwayne McDuffie took over Justice League and had three black characters on a team of 12, and people thought he was pushing an agenda, I remember blowing my mind, as if three characters, as if the other nine were not enough. Anyway, as it all swings back to like things like Superwoman and whatnot, all I know is that I'm in a position now to at least encourage new voices, and if it's the choice between getting another white guy or a woman, I'm always going to seek out the woman, especially if there's a point of view there that I find interesting. If the point of view is dull, then I'll be like, okay, what do you have over here? But if I have to default, because at some point those choices have to be made. In our business, a lot of people hire their friends, and a lot of their friends are like that.
Like them, right?
Yeah. And also they hire people that are easy to work with and people that will turn out product that is familiar to them. And these new voices sometimes might have very different opinions about what that product should look like. And that kind of fight, you know, that takes up time.
But that should be something that, as an industry, that we all kind of strive for, because comics have been around for quite a while now.
Right.
And like you said, default to white guy. So those stories have been told. So we do need people with new ideas, right? Otherwise it gets boring telling the same old story. It's the reason why some people don't care for Superman or don't care for Batman, or why those characters sometimes are hard to write, because it's like, man, they've been around for so long, so many of the stories have been told.
Right.
So we need somebody from a different perspective, a different point of view, to come in and tell a different kind of story.
I always say that. I was on a panel yesterday and we were talking about Battlestar Galactica, the 2005 TV series, and how all the hoo-ha about Starbuck being rebooted as a woman.
Right.
And how I love that, partly because that actor I thought was so amazing, but because just that slight tweak, you get a whole new perspective on a character, right? She was still cigar chomping, best pilot in the fleet, whatever, but slightly different, and therefore the entire story can take on different colors and go down different paths, etc. And for me, that's why I always think, quote unquote, diversity in comics is important, not simply because I believe seeing yourself in a comic matters, but because that slight tweak, like a life experience tweak, and the story is completely different.
Right, stands on its head,
yeah.
And it's something new. And
right, and I say, I know there was a lot of resistance to this, but I never had a problem with Sam Wilson becoming Captain America, because I'm like, that's a totally different point of view. So when you put on that costume, it's a different story. And if it's not, I think there's a problem with that character. That if that character is so much like the other one that they're interchangeable,
then what's the point of having two different characters?
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, we got pretty heavy here, Phil. So let's.
Did we? These are the conversations I have. So.
Well, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. But sorry, everyone.
We'll lighten things up. Just one last question. How excited are you for the Wonder Woman movie?
I will, in pure honesty, what I'm really excited about, is I'm so excited for Patty Jenkins, because I adore her. And I'm excited, and this is a hard answer. So I'm one of those really lucky people who I've had perfect iterations of Wonder Woman in my life. What I'm most excited for are people to discover, particularly young people, the character the way I did when I was young, and hopefully be transformed in the same way. That movie may or may not speak to me. I actually think it's going to be really, really good. But I almost find, like, it doesn't matter, right? Like, I have never been someone clamoring for a Wonder Woman movie. I have my perfect Wonder Woman, so I'm good with that. But what I'm really excited about are, like, my cousin's daughters to see that movie. What I'm really excited about are my friends bringing their children, are boys like me who are going to see it, and hopefully their whole lives will be transformed. So that's a lot to put on any movie, but I find that's what I'm really excited about. It's really cool to see her in action and in a big budget thing, but that's less important to me than the possibilities of what will happen after, especially if she touches the viewers the way I was touched when I was a child.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that it does speak to people, a younger generation, both girls and boys.
Absolutely.
Because it's never a big thing to see a girl wearing a Superman shirt or a Batman shirt. Nobody thinks twice about it. But you see a boy with a Wonder Woman shirt, it's automatically, and it shouldn't be like that.
Right. And and I just did an interview about this, and so one of the things I'll be curious about, because I don't really know, is one of the things I love about Wonder Woman is that she taught women to raise their swords, but she also taught boys to put them down. And that's the thing I'll be curious about in terms of messaging, is what we learn from that version of that character. To rise up against those who oppress and to fight back, but also to remember to put those weapons down and extend a hand in friendship. that's what I'm kind of, that's what I'm actually really excited about, to see how that plays out in that movie.
Well, I think that's a perfect sentiment to end the interview. Thanks for joining me, Phil.
Oh, my pleasure. I didn't mean to yell at you.
No, totally not.